Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the Indian Supreme Court has banned gay sex. Did you hear this? It was a ruling earlier this week. The High Court in India reinstated an old law from 1861 that would impose a 10-year jail sentence for engaging in homosexual acts, a law which was overturned and deemed unconstitutional in 2009. So to understand why India seems to be backtracking when it comes to the civil rights of gay people while most of the world is advancing, we have two guests. Gardner Harris is the South Asia correspondent for The New York Times. He's there. And Sibela Narasimhan, who is a queer, trans, Desi organizer. Desi, if you don't know, refers to someone from South Asia. And Sibela is also a photographer who grew up in India and lives now in Brooklyn. Welcome both of you to WNYC. Hello.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to be here, Brian.
And South Asian listeners, call us up with your reactions or analysis on this setback for gay rights in India. 212-433-WNYC. Have you talked to family back home there or friends? Are you surprised at this move? Do you think it matters long term to LGBT rights in the country? 212-433-WNYC. And especially if you're Indian and a member of the LGBT community, we would love to hear from you, but anyone may call 212-433-9692. So, Gardner, explain what the reinstated law says exactly.
Well, basically, Brian, I mean, this is one of these, you know, very old 19th century laws that have been around forever that has its roots, frankly, in the 1531 Buggery Act of England that basically outlaws what it sort of terms basically any kind of deviant sexual act. And many courts in India have included oral sex in the deviant acts that are forbidden. So it's not just gay sex, but clearly nowadays the focus is on gay sex. And the court basically punted the legal issues. India's Supreme Court is an unimaginably activist case, activist court in sort of an American context. I mean, this is a court that has banned certain kinds of vehicles. Just this week, forbade many bureaucrats here from having the little cherry top on their cars so that they can get through traffic. But banning gay sex was being even a little too activist for them, because fundamentally, Indian society, Brian, is very, very conservative. Women here have very few sexual partners. Surveys show that homosexual sex is deeply frowned upon by the vast majority of Indian society, and this society is basically not ready to embrace homosexuality, I think, in the way that much of the Western modern world has done in the last 10 years.
But, Gardner, what a court does is one thing. What law enforcement does is another thing. So before this law was overturned in 2009, we're talking about 10 years in prison
right. For
homosexual acts. How strictly was this ever enforced?
Well, that's another good question. You know, in India, many, many laws are on the books and are not enforced. India's police system, India's justice system is very much sort of underutilized. I mean, my wife and I are right now in Delhi streets driving the car back to our house, and the lines on the road are what friends of mine refer to as road art. They're not particularly utilized by people as they go around driving. So huge amounts of of just sort of the normal laws are not enforced. And this law was not particularly enforced. It is used in India, as many things are, by the police to bully people. The police in India are overwhelmingly fairly corrupt. Corruption is just an endemic part of police justice. And this law, this banning of gay sex, is yet another tool that police can use to intimidate gay people and make their lives very difficult.
Uh-huh.
So this ruling will probably not have a much day-to-day impact on the lives of gay people in India, but there was a huge symbolic power to this. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, the advocates here went through the legal system because they knew that they had no hope in going through the legislature. There is no chance that the parliament is going to overturn this law anytime soon because, again, Indian society is just not ready for that.
So, Indian American listeners, call us up. What's your reaction to this setback for gay rights in the country that you came from or the country of your ancestors? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC, click on Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Gardner Harris, who is just speaking, is the South Asia correspondent for the New York Times. And we also have with us Sabella Narasimhan, a queer, trans, Desi organizer and photographer who grew up in India and lives now in Brooklyn. And Sabella, you were at this rally at the Indian Consulate here in New York yesterday. What was that like, and what are you asking them to do?
Well, I actually organized the rally. This ruling was like a slap in the face. It was really stunning to activists both in the diaspora as well as in India, and caught us all kind of off guard. And when I found out about it, I connected with a lot of online community all around the world, on Facebook, on Twitter, and, you know, we were all sort of venting our reactions to the verdict on our computers. And at some point the next day, it became clear that we needed and wanted to be in physical spaces together. So I organized a rally so that we could be in community together. And on a really cold day in New York, during work hours, 40 people showed up. They brought drums. They brought signs. They sang. They shared stories. They danced. It was really beautiful. It really helped turn something that felt oppressive and depressing, honestly, to something that mobilized us and made us feel optimistic. Like there was, this was a legal setback, but socially we've come far and we're going to continue to fight.
Let's take a phone call. Deepak on Long Island. You're on WNYC. Deepak, hi.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Nice long-time listener. I love your show. I'm a board-certified psychiatrist that have practiced in this country 25 years and had practiced 5 years in India, in New Delhi, in the best medical school, the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, before coming here. Homosexuality is perceived as an antisocial behavior, just like it was perceived as an antisocial behavior in DSM-1 by the American Psychiatric Association in this country in the 1950s. So India continues to lag behind and perceive homosexuality as an antisocial behavior. And one of the reasons, because this is perceived as an antisocial behavior throughout the community and even among the medical professionals, at least up until when I stayed there, and I keep visiting India every year, and I'm a member of the Indian Psychiatric Association too. The whole medical professional community perceives this whole thing as an antisocial behavior.
So judges, I understand. So you're saying judges don't want to promote what they see as antisocial behavior. So, Deepak, thank you. Please call us again. But Gardner Harris, why was this law overturned originally in 2009 if it's only to be put back now because society isn't ready?
Well, it's a good question, Brian. The court that overturned it is the Delhi High Court, which is arguably the most liberal court in the country. And it was a huge victory when the court overturned it. You know, Indian society is obviously hugely diverse, and there is a section of society in places like Delhi and Mumbai that is as educated and as culturated as any society in the world. 100,000 Indians go to college in the United States every year. And that sort of group and that culture is very much in keeping with the values that are happening right now in New York and in Los Angeles and the rest. But the vast majority of Indians are not in that culture. You know, this is a country that's still two-thirds rural. It's a country where, you know, 700 million people have no access to toilets on a day-to-day basis. And it's also a country that is deeply, deeply steeped in arranged marriages and this very conservative family dynamic where you have to marry and you have to marry young. And, you know, you bring your wife to come live with you in one combined household. That is the fundamental social structure of India. And for, obviously, for a millennia, homosexuality has been seen to be not just outside of that social structure, but a threat to it. So, homosexuality is just not accepted in India. And you know, it's not really accepted in much of Asia. The Chinese aren't that much better about homosexuality. So it's going to be a long fight for the sorts of gay rights that you now take for granted, I think, in places like New York. And even increasingly, as we've seen, gay marriage is now in something like, 14 states in the United States? I mean, it's really become accepted across the country
and
in a way
much
that I
of,
think it was even hard to predict 10 years ago.
Right, and in much of Europe as well. So who knows, Sobello, how fast things may change eventually in India when they do begin to change. But could you explain a little of the history as a transgendered person of India's attitudes toward transgendered people and what's called eunuchs? There's a very unique cultural role that they're supposed to play, right?
Are you asking
Sobello this one.
I want to paint a slightly different picture of a less conservative India. I think that since the Delhi High Court verdict, a lot has changed and gay life in India has blossomed. There are pride rallies in many, many cities for the last 4 years. There have been film festivals and cultural events. People on the streets without masks, you know, willing to like say they're gay and they're out. Many people have come out of the closet. There are literary festivals. So when you say that there's no like visibility, that's definitely not true. And there's much more visibility than there is in many other parts of Asia. And, you know, that is something that can't be turned backwards. We can't turn the clock back to 2008. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. People have tasted freedom, and they have a sense of what it means to come out and be out. And, you know, there is a lot of acceptance. I have experienced a lot of acceptance, and you know, all my friends and community of LGBT people in India have experienced a lot of acceptance. There is a real while there is this conservatism, there's also a really liberal strain to India. So, I mean, we have had gay sex on our temples for like millennia. So, you know, you have to take that into account too, that the conservatism is largely a Victorian import thanks to the Brits. And in terms of trans folks, there is a lot of visibility of hijras and other trans-identified people in India.
You don't think it's homegrown as well as imported traditional conservatism?
I think homophobia exists everywhere in the world. I don't think India has any monopoly on it, and I surely don't think it's greater in India than in other places. I think we do have a culture and history of liberal interpretations of sexuality and sexual orientation, and that still lingers.
We're talking about the ruling this week in India, if you're just joining us, by its Supreme Court returning to an anti-homosexuality law that enables 10-year jail sentences just for having gay sex. And Ashley in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ashley.
Hi, Ryan. My partner is Sikh. She was born and raised here in the United States, but her parents were originally from Punjab, and she has many relatives that live in Delhi. And after we were married in a big ceremony, not legal, in the United States in 2007, we went to India to visit all of her relatives. And we were very nervous about it and had no idea how we would be accepted. And they were all in Delhi, and all the way from her uncle, who's in his 90s, down to her cousins, who are, you know, children. Everybody was terrific, especially her cousins that are in their 20s. They were, like, very eager to be to let us know how accepting they were of us.
That's great to hear. But what do you think about this ruling? What is she saying about it to you since it broke in the news earlier this week, if she has?
Do you know, we haven't even had a chance to discuss because she's been traveling. But we have a lot of friends who are Indian Americans who are gay and lesbian. And I think it's a discussion that we'll
starting
be having a lot.
Because Ashley,
concerns them.
Thank you very much. And Parta in Livingston, you're on WNYC.
Yes, good morning, Brian.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, you're on the air, Parta. Hi.
Good morning. I spoke to you about a year and a half ago about charging, killing 3 to 5 million Bengalis.
Uh-huh.
And now I have produced a movie called Rabindranath Tagore, 150 years. But anyway, I was just going to say that a country like India, which has a long history of religion, is the birthplace of four major religions in the world, Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, and Jainism. With that much of religious baggage, the judges, Supreme Court, they have to uphold, you know, the values of the country, which have been given to us by Buddha, Mahatma Gandhi, Rabindranath Tagore, Swami Vivekananda. This will, I do not think the top court judges will, you know, violate the permanent values given by them just to, you know, satisfy, you know, a group of people. However, you know, we know that this is not a disease. This is a natural bent of mind. But the judges would tend to go the conservative way, just like the Republicans or the Roman Catholics here do not, you know, go for
this kind of thing.
And the
evangelicals and the Orthodox Jews, and as you say, you know, multiple strands of conservative religion in India as in here. So, Partha, thank you very much for your call, and good luck with your film. Gardner, go ahead.
Brian, there's a kaleidoscope of religions here in India, and they pretty much united in sending out missives yesterday and in the days since celebrating this verdict. I mean, India is the wellspring of many, many religions, and many of them are fairly conservative, and many of them called for this law to be reinstated. I mean, it's a terrible thing for many in the LGBT community to talk about, because I think India's spirituality has been one of its great talking points for a long time. But that spirituality often comes from a fairly conservative place.
Sabella, what did you want to add?
I was just going to say, you know, we succeeded where everyone else failed. We managed to somehow unite Christians, Muslims, and Hindus, everyone, you know, for the probably the first time in India's history, against us. So, yeah, it's been a really hard blow to take. But, you know, I just want to keep coming back to the fact that there is a lot of optimism and mobilization, and this is like a wake-up call for LGBT activists in India who were really stunned, who were really expecting something along the lines of the beautifully worded and articulate call for equality that the Delhi High Court verdict was. And so people were really, have been really, this is taking us back. This is trying to take us back to dark days where people are, you know, how the law is interpreted and experienced. People are rounded up. They're harassed. They're bullied. They're threatened. They're blackmailed and arrested and often prosecuted. And so, you know, this is not a great law to live under, but, you know, once you've sort of moved from there to the Delhi court verdict, you know, it's hard to go back, and people are ready to fight it.
Let me take one more call. Sean in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sean.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. And I just wanted to mention something I found very interesting just the other day. I was applying for a visa to travel to India, and it was the first time, and I've traveled a lot and filled out a lot of visa applications. With the first visa application, they gave you three choices for your sex.
Yes.
Three choices for your gender?
For your, male, female, and transsexual, which I thought was very interesting.
So, Bella?
Yes.
Can you explain it?
It's not the conservative America, conservative India we've been hearing about. There has been a lot of progress in gender identity. You know, in terms of getting it, getting trans folks opportunities for jobs, for employment, you know, we're discriminated against, and it's been proven in study after study all across the world.
You would know better than I would, but does this also relate to some kind of old sense of there being a third gender, transgender, or eunuchs, as they're sometimes called?
Yes, India and South Asia and Southeast Asia do have a history of having third gender identities, and Bangladesh and Nepal and a lot of different countries have incorporated that into their ID cards and their visas and things like that, as well as into special programs for trans folks to get access to, as I said, education and employment. But, you know, it's also a culturally visible thing. So trans people in India and much of South Asia are really the visible front. And actually, trans people are kind of the visible front all around the world. Like, it's often gender nonconforming people. It's not the people who pass who are necessarily going to be targets on the street or by the police. I think that trans people get the brunt of the harassment and the blackmail and the rounding up, and a lot of hijras have been, arrested based on 377.
Sabella Narasimhan, who is a queer trans Desi organizer and photographer who grew up in India and lives now in Brooklyn, and Gardner Harris, South Asia correspondent for The New York Times. Thank you both very much.
Sure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the secular case against suicide from historian and atheist Jennifer Michael Hecht. Stay with us.